Welcome to KHD Bible Study Podcast. My name is Rabbi Emanuel. I'm a teacher and an elder at Kehilath HaDerech Messianic Synagogue in New York City. Each week, I lead a detailed study from a Messianic Jewish perspective into the Holy Scriptures, chapter by chapter, adding historical context to the events, people, and places. Each week, passionate people gather to read the scriptures, discuss the significance, and ask questions that help to bring out a deeper understanding of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. And now, open your holy Bibles and grab a pen and paper, because we embark together on a new journey through the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to learn about Yeshua HaMashiach. Okay, thank you very much for coming. We are starting a new series tonight, Mashiach, a new harmony of the Gospels. We will be looking at the Gospels, or the Besorah, from a Messianic Jewish perspective. First, let us get started. Right off the bat, the first question to ask is, what is the difference between the way that the Tanakh and the New Testament developed in terms of how they were rendered or how they are currently visible today? The Tanakh has been faithfully copied since the days of Moses. Equally important is that there has always been a prescribe or a prophet or a judge who examined the book for accuracy. The original Great Assembly, which we talked about in the previous series, which included Zechariah, Malachi, Haggai, Ezra, and Nehemiah, worked as a committee to ensure the accuracy of the Torah to that date, and the prophets and the writings. So the Torah, the prophets and the writings were actually sealed in a sense when Ezra and Nehemiah put together the Book of Chronicles, which ended the series, which ended the Tanakh. The Brit Hadashah, or the New Testament, developed in a very different process. During the lifetime of the emissaries or apostles, many of the testimonies were delivered directly in synagogues, as you see in the book of Acts and in the Gospels. The New Testament books we see today evolved originally from oral reports of firsthand witnesses. And that, of course, led to many people creating their own narrative accounts with their own little twist of the truth, actually during the lifetime of Yeshua's emissaries. Most of these early accounts were fragments, and they did not survive translation into Greek or to any other languages. But they were seen by the emissaries and likely prompted them to write their testimonies to set the record straight, which you will kind of see, especially in the book of Luke. Something Luke, who is not an emissary, who is not a disciple, mentions in his opening statements. And we will go over that at a later time. The emissaries' letters from Yeshua's disciples, they wrote their letters to address immediate needs to the people that were being assembled and the people that were beginning to become believers, Jewish believers, and to speak to them as if they were addressing the assemblies live. They held weight and authority, which was unquestioned by the large number of eyewitnesses to Yeshua. Many of them, and originally most of them, were Jews who were in Judea during his ministry. Some historians point out that not all synagogues had the same letters at the same time. And that's true. Those in Judea mostly had the testimonies of the emissaries, while the synagogues of Paul mostly had his letters. Now, how did that come about? Well, to get all the letters in a single synagogue, one would have had gained access to all the letters and to manually copy the text, while another person edited for accuracy for the original. So we are actually able to see that process played out during the letters of Paul or Shaul, who wrote about maintaining contact with new assemblies by letters to the leaders. And occasionally, those new assemblies receive visits by the leaders from Judea. If you look at page 3 of the handout, you will see the Manchester Gaster 1616 manuscript. which was created in this fashion, but in the 1800s by a scholar who visited the Cochin Jews in India, who had a large collection of Hebrew manuscripts. They had been meticulously copied from generation to generation. And because they belonged to the Jews in that part of India, this scholar was not able to take the manuscripts with him back to England. So what he did is he sat down and he meticulously copied. And this copy now is an original handwritten manuscript, which is being stored in the UK, in Manchester, England. The testimonies of the emissaries that we read each week, the testimonies of the emissaries were read each week after reading the Torah and the prophets in synagogues. The original Hebrew term for the emissaries' letters revealed their nature. They were called Besorah, which translates to good news or glad tidings. So each shul, each congregation of Jews, began their services by reading the Torah and the prophets, just like we see with Yeshua when he enters the synagogues. And then they would read the good news, the Besorah, those letters that were written by the actual followers of Yeshua. Now, I know that these phrases may not be familiar with many of us today, Besorah, but it does mean good news or glad tidings. It's in this process of Shabbat readings, which over time legitimized the writings that eventually became our Brit Hadashah, also called the New Testament. But that is the simplified version of the story. The rest of the story is turbulent and takes place over hundreds of years, about 300 years, with competing canons, and leads to conferences and battles. I mean, literal fistfights between leaders in different cities who were complaining about modifications, insertions into the text, and eventually a final canon was settled on. But it took about 300 years for that to take place. Like I said, the story is not for the faint of heart, and I will not put you through all of those stories. In this series, we will be covering the following broad areas in the next few weeks. Let's go ahead and move to the last page of the handout. We will move slowly and methodically. This is not a college course, so there won't be grades. It's really, truly meant to be a Bible study with ordinary people, not scholars. When there are lots of material to cover in a given week, I will advise everyone to come on time. Everyone arrive on time, start at 7 o'clock, be right there because we may jump right into the readings and you will miss some material if you're late. We will read short passages across all four books as they pertain to the flow of our study. So be prepared with a Bible to switch back and forth between the four gospels. Each reader volunteer will announce the selection they are reading before they start reading. And that will give the listeners at home and abroad in various countries around the world the opportunity to know which book and which section of reading that we're covering, as opposed to our usual format where we read an entire book all the way to the end. At the top tonight, we're going to be covering pre-existence and the genealogies. But in the next week, we'll be looking at the birth and the early childhood, which includes the angelic visits and the birth of Yeshua, which has its own controversy because there is this Christmas story, which is made up of a compilation of the Gospels, as you'll see when we read the actual Gospels. We'll cover baptism and temptation, and the largest sections will be the early ministry, which will include the miracles, the parables, and the next section will be the Galilee. Also, again, a very large section. It'll hold the confession of faith of Peter, the transfiguration, the foretelling of crucifixion. All of these will be covered piece by piece, book by book, across all four books at once. We'll need lots of volunteers with very clear voices to help us go through this. The next section, which is also a very large section, is Jerusalem. I can't do these in weeks. Some weeks will go on for several weeks. Some sections will go on for several weeks. So we've called them sections. After Jerusalem is the betrayal and the trial, followed by the crucifixion and burial, and then the resurrection and ascension. So as I mentioned, this week, we're going to look at the two genealogies in Matthew and Luke. And before we begin the readings, I want to emphasize that there are two categories of writers of the Gospels, two distinct categories. Matthew and John were emissaries or the apostles who lived and studied every day with Yeshua. Luke and Mark are considered what we would use today, adjuncts, men who recorded the memories of living emissaries. So they listened to them, they compiled them, they compared them, they read them, they looked them over, and then they were published. Luke compiled his narratives from pre-existing sources and the testimony of the emissaries, especially Paul. Mark compiled his account directly from the memories of Peter. So you'll notice they have very unique styles. This week, before we begin to get into the readings, and this week and next week, I'm going to give you a brief profile of the writers. The first one we'll cover this week is Luke, who's called Lukos in his gospel. Luke, whom we are all familiar with, was a Jewish physician who recorded his letters from previous accounts, many of which did not survive because they were simply fragments, and they were scattered among many churches or many shuls or many synagogues. And by the way, during this time period, there were synagogues in Israel, but in the synagogues that rose up all around the region, in Turkey and in other places, they were mostly in homes. They were literally in someone's home. Luke recorded events while attending to Paul. He writes around 60 CE of the modern era. He has a deep grasp of the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. He is the author of the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, Acts of the Apostles. He addressed these to a Jewish priest named Theophilus. His overall position is to show that Yeshua was fulfilling the promises of ancient Israel from the Torah and the prophets. In Acts, recorded almost live, rather than from other accounts, he demonstrates that Adonai Elohim always intended to graft Gentiles into the kingdom. He did not concern himself with Jewish legal matters, but he does highlight the discussions that Yeshua has with the Pharisees and other Jewish leaders of the day. Mark's account, by the way, Mark's name is actually Yohanan Marcos, or John Mark. Now that's important because you'll be able to identify him through the scriptures, which I'll give you as we read along here. Mark's account was compiled from the memories of Peter. Scholars identified a young man as a relative of Barnabas. We don't know whether he was a brother, or nephew, or cousin, but they all lived together as families. So he was a relative of Barnabas. He was a devout Jew who wrote about 55 to 65 CE. So his account was a little earlier. In Acts 13:5, the John, referred to as John Mark, is the writer of gospel. So in Acts 13:5, the name John will appear, and it is referring to John Mark, the writer of the Gospel of Mark. When Peter was freed from jail by the angel, he went directly to the house of Miriam, the mother of John Mark. It is likely this encounter which led the younger John Mark to become a follower of Peter. And as we know from that story in Acts 12, Peter was in jail and he was freed by an angel, and he immediately went to the house of Miriam, the mother of Yohanan, also called John Mark. In 1 Peter 5:13, Peter's relationship with John Mark was very close, and he saw the young man as his son. For a time, John Mark followed Barnabas and Paul. But shortly after, Paul blinded a false Jewish prophet by the name of Bar Yeshua, also called Elymas. John Mark returned to Jerusalem. And that takes place in Acts 13. Historians believe Paul and Mark had an argument before he departed to Jerusalem, but they were reconciled later when Paul was in prison, and he sent Timothy to go find Mark when they pronounced a death sentence against him in Rome. So, and that passage, or that reference, you'll see in 2 Timothy 4:11, where Paul asks Timothy to go and find John Mark. Mark's account, as dictated by Peter, is short and focused on details only a disciple would know. You see a very different picture of Yeshua. Yeshua does not wish to reveal his divine nature to the masses because he's talking directly to his disciples. He silences the loudmouth demons, refusing to give power demonstrations, meaning what we call signs today. He refused, they were asking him to demonstrate his power, and he refused to do that. And he commands those who are healed to follow the Torah instructions and not draw attention to himself. Mark's words emphasize service, humility, and faith. Luke and Mark held an important position, which only survives in Greek manuscripts as the term hopereites. That's Greek, hopereites, translated as helper. But what it really means is minister servant. And in the modern Hebrew translations, the word is replaced with ozer, which means assistant, aide, or adjunct. These ozers to the emissaries or to the apostles were actually considered to be servants of the word because they were entrusted by the apostles to translate or to record what they were saying, their memories, and to put them into a letter that would be distributed to other shuls and other assemblies. So the two men tonight that we are looking at are Luke and Mark, and they were considered servants of the word, or ozers, as they're called in modern Hebrew, which means an assistant, aide, or adjunct. They were allowed exclusive access to Peter, for instance, when he was in jail, something that Baruch also did for Jeremiah. So it's a tradition. It's actually a tradition all throughout the scriptures, because you'll remember that Joshua was the adjunct or the assistant aide to Moses. So this has a history that goes way back. Next week, we'll profile Matthew and John. Right now, what we'll do is we will start the actual readings. And the first reading is John 1, verses 1 through 18.
In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the world was God. The Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. All things were made through him, and apart from him, nothing was made that has come into being. In him was life, and the light was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overpowered it. There came a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify about the light, so that through him everyone might believe. He was not the light, but he came to bear witness concerning the light. The true light coming into the world gives light to every man. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, but the world did not know him. He came to his own, but his own did not receive him. But whoever did receive him, those trusting in his name, to these he gave the right to become children of God. They were born not of a bloodline, nor of human desire, nor of man's will, but of God. And the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us. We looked upon his glory, the glory of the one and only from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testifies about him. He cried out, saying, "This is he of whom I said, the one who comes after me is above me because he existed before me." Out of his fullness, we have all received grace on top of grace. Torah was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Yeshua, the Messiah. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only God in the Father's embrace has made him known.
Thank you. And next, we will look at Matthew 1, 1 through 17. Now, let me set this up for you. There are two different genealogies. Matthew 1, 1 through 17 is a genealogy from King David to Yeshua. Luke, which starts in chapter 3, verse 23 through 38, is presumed to be Mary's genealogy. So Yeshua comes through Mary's line and through Joseph's line officially, because Joseph was the husband. So let us read Matthew 1, verses 1 through 17.
The book of the genealogy of Yeshua HaMashiach ben David ben Avraham. Abraham fathered Isaac. Isaac fathered Jacob. Jacob fathered Judah and his brothers. Judah fathered Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Aminadab. Aminadab fathered Nachshon. Nachshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz by Rahab. Boaz fathered Obed by Ruth. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David the king. David fathered Solomon by the wife of Uriah. Solomon fathered Rehoboam. Rehoboam fathered Abiah. Abiah fathered Asa. Asa fathered Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat fathered Joram. Joram fathered Uzziah. Uzziah fathered Jotham. Jotham fathered Ahaz. Ahaz fathered Hezekiah. Hezekiah fathered Manasseh. Manasseh fathered Amon. Amon fathered Josiah. And Josiah fathered Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the exile to Babylon. After the Babylonian exile, Jeconiah fathered Shealtiel. Shealtiel fathered Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel fathered Abiud. Abiud fathered Eliakim. Eliakim fathered Azor. Azor fathered Zadok. Zadok fathered Achim. Achim fathered Eliud. Eliud fathered Eleazar. Eleazar fathered Matan. Matan fathered Jacob. And Jacob fathered Joseph, the husband of Miriam, from whom was born Yeshua, who is called the Messiah.
So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations. From David until the Babylonian exile are 14 generations, and from the Babylonian exile until the Messiah are 14 generations. Now, before we move on to Luke, there's some important things I want to share with you. This, I'm going to read from you comments from a commentary, a rabbinic commentary on Matthew, concerning verse 1, 3, chapter 1, verse 3. Now, this is a direct quote from a commentary. Tamar, Rahab, Rut, the wife of Uriah, Bathsheba, Miriam, women, especially those born Gentiles, were rarely included in biblical genealogies. The first four were Gentile women whom God honored by including them among the recorded ancestors of Yeshua, the Jewish Messiah, through whom Gentiles, women and slaves are saved equally with Jews. men and free, Galatians 3:28. On whether these women became Jews or continued to be Gentiles, see Acts 16, verse 1. They say there are, when they say they say, by the way, I need to jump out of the quote for a moment. When they say, this is a style of writing, especially in the Talmud and the Mishnah. And you'll see this used throughout the Gospels. They say there are two women from whom come David the king and Solomon and the king Messiah. These two are Tamar and Ruth. This is from Jonathan ben Uzziel on Genesis 38:6, says that Tamar was the daughter of Shem the Great. And this comes to us from Shemot Rabbah, section 30, folio 131, section 4. So this is from a rabbinic commentary on Matthew. Now, I wanted to mention this because it's still fresh in our minds, that it was unusual to have women listed into a genealogy. But the rabbis recognized that that is a something that was predicted, or shall I say that was something that was expected of the Messiah. This will be pertaining to verse 1, verse 12. And this is about Zerubbabel. In the book of Zechariah, it says, and again, I'm quoting a rabbinic commentary. In the book of Zechariah, it says, "Who are you, great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you are a plain, and he will bring out the capstone with shouts of grace, grace to it." Zechariah 4, verse 7. The Midrash, Tanhuma, states the following about Zechariah 4, 7. What does it mean? Who art thou, O great mountain? This is King Messiah. And why does he call him great mountain? Because he is greater than the fathers, loftier than Abraham, more elevated than Moses, and higher than the ministering angels. And from whom will he issue? From Zerubbabel. This is from the Midrash Tanhuma, or it's I should say it, Tanhuma, Toldot 14, edition Bubber 139, cited in the Messiah text by Raphael Patai. So I wanted to reinforce to you that not all Jewish rabbis have a negative opinion about Yeshua. There are a number of rabbis who have begun to take in and to point out, not only from the Besorah, not only from the Gospels, but from the rest of the Holy Scriptures, that there is a King Messiah who is supposed to come. This is standard belief in Judaism today. Now, let's go ahead and read Luke 3:23. So turn to Luke 3:23. Yeshua was about 30 years old when he began his ministry. Keep in mind, as I said, Luke is writing from the memories of the apostles, from the emissaries, and from other accounts that he found along the way. Yeshua was about 30 years old when he began his ministry. He was the son, as was supposed, of Joseph, the son of Heli, the son of Mahat, the son of Levi, the son of Melchi, the son of Janai, the son of Joseph, the son of Matthias, the son of Amos, the son of Nahum, the son of Esli, the son of Nagai, the son of Maath, the son of Matthias, the son of Semenin, the son of Josek, the son of Joda, the son of Jonan, the son of Resha, the son of Zerubbabel, the son of Shatiel, the son of Neri, the son of Melchi, the son of Adai, the son of Kosam, the son of Eladam, the son of Ur, the son of Joshua, the son of Eleazar, the son of Joram, the son of Mathat, the son of Levi, the son of Simeon, the son of Judah, the son of Joseph, the son of Johanan, the son of Elkan, the son of Maliah, the son of Minna, the son of Mattatha, the son of Nathan, the son of David, the son of Jesse, the son of Obed, the son of Boaz, the son of Salmon, the son of Nashan, the son of Amminadab, the son of Ram, the son of Hezron, the son of Perez, the son of Judah, the son of Jacob, the son of Yitzhak, the son of Abraham, the son of Terah, the son of Noah, of Nahor, the son of Serug, the son of Reu, the son of Peleg, the son of Eber, the son of Shelah, the son of Kainan, the son of Arphaxad, the son of Shem, the son of Noah, the son of Lamech, the son of Methuselah, the son of Enoch, the son of Jared, the son of Mahalalel, the son of Kenan, and the son of Enosh, the son of Seth, the son of Adam, the son of God. Now you'll notice that he took a very different approach. He started with Yeshua and he worked his way backwards up to the last phrase that he uses, the son of God. So we have two different genealogies, which means the common ancestor beyond Abraham, beyond Jacob. The most common ancestor is David. Next week, I did prepare a genealogy chart, which I'll publish with the next PDF so that you can see the line of the names. But essentially, David is listed. Solomon starts the line of Joseph. And David's son, Nathan, who is by the same mother as Solomon, is the Nathan starts the line which leads to Mary. So they come from the same lineage. And both of these writers wanted to make sure that, because they're talking to a Jewish audience, they wanted to make sure that there was no doubt in their minds. The other thing is that you have to realize that during this time period, people knew which family they came from and which family each other's came from. So it was well known that Yeshua was the son of Joseph and that Joseph was the son of David. And you'll see that played out next week when Joseph has to return to his ancestral home with his very pregnant wife for the tax purposes, to pay the tax for the Roman Empire. In conclusion, I wanted to point out one thing about the book of John. The Besorah of John, the Besorah of Yohanan, is the only book that emphasizes that Yeshua existed in another form before his birth. I believe that the Gospel of John was composed after John's visions and revelation. His work does not rely on any noticeable pre-existing sources and seems to be told as an intimate journal. Yeshua himself, in various Gospels, gives account of events that take place in heaven, including angelic battles. He also asserts that the Father has never been seen or has spoken with any individual. We know if Yeshua had lied about any of these events, he would have been guilty of sin and would not have been resurrected. That resurrection was witnessed by a great many people in Jerusalem and the surrounding area, both Jewish and Roman. Next week, when we cover the birth of Yeshua, I will give rabbinic quotes that show that the messenger of the Lord is Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh himself. And the messenger of the Lord is a term that has been applied to the Messiah King. I'll also share with you one or two Torah references that identify that this messenger of the Lord has been featured all throughout the Torah. With different terms in different places, he appears as an angel, but there is someone who has been speaking to people all the way back to Abraham. Next week, we will also read the accounts of various angelic encounters, which reveal additional details to both Miriam, Yosef, and Joseph, and to Zacharias about who Yeshua is. We will also show what the name Yeshua means in a Jewish context from a rabbinic commentary. I will say, I'll leave you with this last little bit. The name that we have with us, Jesus, makes no sense from the Greek, I'm sorry, from either from the Greek perspective and also from the Jewish perspective, because it's a modern name. It's a modern name that was attached to a different to a Latin name for Yeshua, which is Iosus. So in a sense, it's getting further and further away. It's sort of like when you make a copy of a copy of a copy. Anyone who's ever been to a copy machine and has made copies of copies know that it becomes to get this, it begins to get distorted the further down the line that the copy is made. And the same is true with the name. There is purpose and meaning in the name Yeshua, which we will go over in detail next week. And you'll see how it fits in a Hebrew context and how it's passed along to in a Greek context. And also in a let me say etymologically, it's a contraction of the Hebrew name Yehoshua, which in English means Joshua, which means Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh saves. So we will go into that in much greater detail next week. I want to thank you all for coming. I hope you'll join us as we go through the birth of Yeshua, the angelic visits, and begin to dig deeper into the harmony of the Gospels of our Mashiach. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for exploring the Besorah, the good news of the kingdom of God with us. In the words of Malachi, behold, I am sending my messenger, and he will clear the way before me. Suddenly he will come to his temple, the Lord whom you seek, and the messenger of the covenant, the one whom you desire. Behold, he is coming, says Adonai Sabaoth. Join us next week as we continue the journey